Right, so it is 12:15 on Thursday, September 15th, 2022. We are calling to order the board meeting of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin Board of Commissioners, as well as the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, the Austin Affordable Housing, the Austin Affordable Public Facilities Corporation, Inc., and the Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation. Mr. Gerber, will you please call the roll for all those meetings?
Commissioner Bailey?
Here.
Commissioner Duncan Hall?
Present.
Commissioner Carrington?
Present.
Commissioner Apostolo?
Present.
Commissioner Ritchie?
Present.
Mr. Chairman, we have full house today.
We have a quorum. We're officially called over at 12:15 p.m., and we will turn and do the Pledge of Allegiance and be led by Commissioner Apostolo.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the
United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Chairman, we are going to go immediately into executive session to connect with counsel. We're doing that under the Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation agenda, and we'll also be doing it under the Housing Authority of the City of Austin agenda. We're going into executive session pursuant to Section 551.071 of the Texas Government Code for consultations with attorneys regarding legal advice, pending or contemplated litigation or settlement offer under 551.0272 of the Texas Government Code for discussion about purchase, exchange, lease, or value of real estate, real property. Section 551.074 of the Texas Government Code discussing employment, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of a public officer or employee, or to hear a complaint or charge against an officer or an employee, as well as Section 551.087 of the Texas Government Code to discuss certain economic development negotiations. We anticipate that the executive session for both Southwest Housing Compliance and for ANCA should take no longer than 30 minutes.
So with that, we're going to ask all the staff, with the exception of Ron Cobwell and Suzanne.
We'll just need Orlando for this one.
Actually, we'll ask everybody to jump off except Orlando.
Mr. Chairman, the executive session adjourned at 1:38, and you're returning us to regular order.
All right. So we will go to the Housing Authority of the City of Austin Board of Commissioners meeting, and the first item would be public communication. Did anyone sign up to speak?
No one has signed up, Mr. Chairman. Is there anyone wishing to speak?
Hearing none, the next is the Citywide Advisory Board update.
Lupe Garcia is here. Thanks for waiting patiently.
Thank you.
Give us the highlights, Lupe.
Okay, the highlights are I'm here today.
Yay.
The meeting was called to order at 10:34 on September 13, 2022. Michael Roth announced 3 active COVID cases, recorded and provided Rosewood updates. The Gerber mentioned groundbreaking ceremony for Goodrich, completion of Chalmers West, considering Santa Rita for the next development project. How community development. Catherine Crago shared a digital inclusion update. Google Fiber is now at Northeast. Delani Villegas mentioned the community education event funds are available for National Night Out. Austin Pathways received 2 grants. City WAB meeting are hybrid scheduled, and Veronica Riggins provided youth educational success updates. Daniel Reese introduced UT social worker intern Sandy Berlandez and provided Rosewood home ownership program updates. The Lani Chair Workforce Development for IDAS and IMOPS updates and mentioned Corey Jones as the new IDAS and ARO coordinator. Lani gave bringing home health care updates and mobile health screening clinic at 7 properties. New business. Evelyn Holmes chaired National Night Out kickoff then. Next meeting in person at Lakeside October 11, 2022. Subject to change. Citywide Board voted to spend $200 on food and flowers for Isaac Robinson farewell event, former resident commissioner at Lakeside. Property updates. Veronica Castillo Perez at Chalmers mentioned they had a town hall meeting July 18th to discuss the increase in crime at Chalmers East and Chalmers South. I, Lupe Garcia, discussed the IMAX kickoff event, and the meeting was adjourned at 11:42 a.m.
Are there any questions for Lupe? I had one. How did the IMAX meeting go the other day?
IMAX was so great. I had 36 IMAX, 8 vendors. It was awesome. Really, really turned out to be the best one yet. We had new members join, new IMAX join. So I'm at close to about 50, and it's getting big. So I need suggestions. 50 is a lot. I had 5 IMAX call already. They want to join, but I want to see the capacity that I can have at Santa Rita.
So in such a short period of time,
yes,
they have attracted more IMOMS candidates than we've had in our IDES. It was harder to reach out to the guys. But the nice part is she's having the wives and the girlfriends bring the fathers into the IDES for
her. Oh.
It works very well that way. Go backwards. And it's a great event because the IMOMS also bring their children. So
the children are involved.
And the children are there as well. So it's 2-generational approach. A little different, but it's been successful so far. Congratulations.
Lupe, how does one, if a mom is interested, how do they just join, or is there some kind of process to go through?
Usually what happens is they'll call or they'll get in touch with me, and then I explain to them what IMOM's all about, and then they have it. From there, they can have a choice. If they're still interested, they can come and join, and then when they get there, I get their name, their information, what they're interested in, what they're looking for, what kind of resources they need. And then I, in return, will look for resources for whatever the need is for that one family. And then I turn around and I try to look for resources and invite vendors or sponsors to come with that resource on that into the meetings.
Okay. You mean monthly?
Monthly. So Capital Metro came with job offerings. Home Health Care came with vaccine information. Urban League came with training, back to school information. And we had 3 young ladies sign up for them. And we have Safe Place come in. And we also helped 3 young ladies with Safe Place. So it's all different. It's all different resources. It's just not one. So we have education, we have health, we have domestic violence, job hunting. It's just about everything.
And you all help identify the resources.
Yes.
That they need.
Congratulations.
Really. Very proud. But again, I do have a great team. I don't do this by myself. I couldn't handle it. So Mary Postolo is like my right hand right now. I think she's getting tired. But, yeah, I appreciate it, and I appreciate the support. I really do. It is awesome. I don't know how long more I'll continue doing it, but as long as I can, I will help each and every one.
Didn't they tell you you can't leave until you find somebody to take over?
Well, Mr. Gilbert said you need 5 years and then 40 years more. So I kind of calculated that I'll be 118. Anything wrong, don't blame it on me.
Never break 100.
But anyway, yeah, thank you so much, and I appreciate it. I'm taking my books.
Oh, great. Good. Show those.
And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
And you need home. Is there any other questions about citywide or anything?
I think we're good. Yeah, any other questions, board members?
Well, and just very quickly, and I know Lupe mentioned a farewell breakfast for a former resident commissioner, Isaac Robinson.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
It's on the 22nd, I believe. There's going to be a little breakfast get-together for wishing him well on his next sort of chapter.
Yeah. I think I shared with most of you that he's not doing well, and so he's got an opportunity to live with family, and hopefully his condition will improve, but not, we'll keep in our prayers and hopefully I'll take the name with closer to family. But at the with the chairman's permission, I have and with our citywide advisory board president's permission, we're going to send some flowers as well as some food from on behalf of both the jointly from this board and citywide in honor of Mr. Robinson's service. So we'll do that.
Good.
Thanks, Lupe.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate you.
Next item is the consent agenda, and on the consent agenda is the approval of the board minutes summary from the board meeting held on August 18th. Are there any changes or corrections that need to be made to the minutes?
I move approval of the minutes.
I second.
Made by Commissioner Duncan Hall, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We go to action items.
Mr. Chairman, can we hop around just a little bit to free some folks up? If we could start off on the HACA agenda going to item number 5.
All right. So item number 5, we'll go to Mr. Teasdale. Discussion, possible action regarding resolution number 2764, the fire damage restoration in Nighthawk. In Pathways at Thurman Heights.
Thank you, sir. And in the interest of everyone's time, I'll be very brief. Earlier this year, HACA did suffer the loss of one unit at the Thurman Heights apartments through fire. And, of course, we have had the unit completely emptied, vacated, and now demoed out for the repair work. It's down to the studs. And we went out for bid, of course, for this size project and received 16 interests in the project, 16 manuals picked up. Only one bid returned by a local contractor that we're very comfortable with. And the price came in to just about what we paid to have the darn thing built several years ago. We are asking for a contract award approval in the amount of $111,000 to local contractor Arco Iris Contractors. I'd be happy to take specific questions if you have any.
Any questions of Mr. Teasdale? Hearing none, the board will entertain a motion to approve item number 5, resolution number 2764.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Carrington, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Was anyone injured?
No, the unit was vacant at the time. People were out of town.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, we would ask that we go to item number 6 on the HACA agenda.
Thank you.
To approve resolution number 2757, the some revisions to the procurement policy. To reflect some of the program changes that have been made since we've gone and moved to RAD, as well as providing for some additional flexibilities to the agency. Laura?
Yes, I just want to make sure. I have agenda number 2765. You said 67.
I'm sorry, 2765.
Okay, see that. Okay. Yes, so this resolution is to reflect some of the recent changes that that have been made, and that will give us additional flexibilities. I believe it was explained in the agenda. And it was just basically to we no longer have to follow Davis Bacon or Section 3. So, and we increased the petty cash to $50, and we removed a lot of the verbiage that was that reflected to those two items. If there's any questions, that's about all the changes.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Nora, the small purchase procedures ranges between $3,000 and $150,000. And I guess what occurred to me is that I really don't remember having seen any information about how many minority companies have received contracts in this area. We get the ones where, of course, it's more than that. But if we're talking about trying to increase our diversity in vendors and companies, it seems there probably would be more within this range of money for contracts than in the larger range. And so I was wondering, have we done anything at all to see how our progress has been going in this area?
We're not changing any of those thresholds, and actually, they're not all purchase orders or contracts as well. And we've awarded a lot of different POs for a lot of small contractors, even in this area and the reserve for replacement. So there has been a lot of – this will allow us to have more competition with the smaller contractors.
Right. That's why I asked the question.
Yes.
Do we feel good about
– Yes, absolutely.
Percentage of participation from minority companies?
Most of the minorities that on the – even on the – larger contractors are being the services provided by small contractors.
One of my largest Unity contractors is minority owned. The pest control is minority owned. The all of that is minority owned. JG is
with Carlson, our biggest construction partners.
Well, absolutely, and we're fixing to go out for bid to have a pool of small contractors to assist the PBRA properties to get faster service.
I just might add one item. In our shop, of course, our minority participation goal is at least 20%. We're always over 50%. Always.
Okay.
Maura, question. Do you have any idea since we are allowed to now drop Davis-Bacon, what that will result in from a price standpoint for contractors? Now, in years past, I've heard some percentages of if they have to comply with Davis-Bacon, this is how much more you have in a contract if they didn't have to comply. So do we have kind of an idea of, is it 20%? Is it 10%? Is it?
Well, on the Davis-Bacon, it's mostly construction.
I'd be happy to answer that.
So contractors
will basically put us at their whim on regarding how much the administrative burden is to them, but it is absolutely an increase on most every contract that we do. And the first question that comes back from contractors typically is this a DB required project? And when we answer yes, they're tacking on 500, 1,000, 5,000, depending on the size of the project. This does relieve the burden of administrative effort by them on this particular issue, so we expect that we'll see some moderate relief about it. But it's, for me, it's not really the amount of the relief because it's not that much across a several hundred thousand dollar contract. It's participation. Some contractors don't want to get involved because of the administrative burden, and when we relieve that from them, we get more people in the mix. And more people in the mix means more competition, and that drives prices down for us.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Chairman, I have a quick question.
Chuck, go ahead.
When we make a change like this, do you run that by our auditors?
We do, and we certainly run it by council as well, and they've been part of this process the whole way through.
Run it by council. We spent a lot of time and a lot of research coming up with these changes, and we wanted to make sure that it wasn't going to affect us in a negative way. So we did ask a lot of questions. So we feel comfortable with these recommendations.
And you think the auditors, when they come in and see the change on the petty cash and on the Davis-Bacon, I think I know what that means, you think they'll be fine with that?
Well, I don't know, because we'll probably have new auditors, but as long as we follow our policy, there should not be a problem.
Right.
And that's what we want to make sure that we follow it, and we're going to be all of the updating the SOP and working with all the end users to make sure that they understand, you know, that we will continue. Really, it's really not a whole lot of different changes. It's just planning and knowing, you know, what is it that, you know, what process that we need to take. And we're always in conversation and we always try to do the right thing.
And we've had an older policy targeted to our old public housing program. These are the first updates since to really help us realize the benefits of RAD. And I think our auditors have asked why we haven't stepped up yet to make these changes. It's taken a long time to get to these changes as we as an agency have adapted, you know, and incorporated RAD and adopted RAD, you know, in a full-throated way. So I think the timing is right, and we should see some streamlining, we should see some savings, and we should see some clarity.
Simplification
for folks.
Okay.
If there's no more questions, we would suggest a motion to approve Resolution 2765.
I move.
There's a motion made by Commissioner Apostola, seconded by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Is there any further discussions? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to go over to Southwest Housing Appliance Corporation. This meeting was opened at 12:15, and all we are need, there's no need for an executive session, and we would ask for a motion to adjourn the meeting.
So moved.
Commissioner Carrington moves to adjourn. Commissioner Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any discussion? All in favor of adjourning the Southwest Housing Appliance Corporation meeting? Please say aye.
Aye.
And Southwest Housing is adjourned at 2:05. We now turn to let's turn to the Austin Affordable PFC. Mr. Carrington.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. The meeting of the Austin Affordable PFC has been called to order. A quorum has been established. Is there any public communication? Has anyone signed up?
There's none, Commissioner.
For public, okay. No public communication. Then the first item is the consent agenda for the minutes of the board meeting, which was held August the 18th, 2022.
I move approval.
Okay. Tyra Duncan Hall moves and Mary seconds. Any discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The one action item for the PFC is the presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding Resolution 00094, declaring intent to issue bonds to provide financing for a multifamily residential rental development for persons of low and moderate income at Pathways at Rosewood Courts. This would prescribing certain terms and conditions of the bonds, authorizing the filing of an application for allocation to the private to proper private activity bonds with Texas Bond Board and containing other provisions related to the project. And Suzanne, are you the
and yes,
okay.
Very quickly. Take it away.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Anne Gass, Director of Strategic Housing Initiatives for HACA. You may remember back in April 2021, you all approved a resolution for $30 million for bonds for the redevelopment of Rosewood Courts. In the 18 months since, I think we all know that prices have been rising. The development budget, particularly construction costs, have gone up considerably. I won't go into too many details, but the IRS requires something called the 50% test. It's a threshold that requires that 50% of allowable expenses are financed by bonds. When we brought the $30 million resolution to you all, we felt very comfortable that we would be able to meet the 50% test with that dollar amount. With the rise in costs, we are not comfortable with the cushion that we have. And so we are asking today for an additional $5 million inducement to ensure that we have sufficient cushion to meet the 50% test and to allow us to get the full allocation of tax credits that we need to complete this redevelopment.
That was the 4% tax credits, right?
Yes, ma'am, 4%. Are there any other questions?
I move approval.
Second?
Yeah, I do have a question.
Okay.
So we're basically, we're going to go and we're going to issue an additional $5 million on top of the 30.
Right.
And just kind of just in general. So on something like this, when we find ourselves in this place, is there a cap on the amount you can do in terms of the inducement? Like, for instance, if we decided, well, maybe, $7.5 million is better. I mean, is there a number or is it just based on our calculation of what we're going to go to the bond review board and ask for?
I will always defer to Bill, but it's as in my understanding, it's our discretion as to what we need.
But you want to try to right size it.
Mm-hmm.
And what's been challenging is we haven't been able to get as clear a picture because of changing circumstances as we would like, which is what has ended us up here, getting this little bit of cushion. But, Bill, would you highlight quickly?
Yeah, certainly that's fine. You know, this would be a supplemental, in the event a new application was filed, this would be treated as a supplemental issuance. And so there really is no cap except the standard cap that you would go in. So there is room to go much higher. I think what's before you today is already a supplemental amount that provides a pretty safe margin. You know, right now the transaction does still pass the 50% test. The problem is that in the event construction costs continue to rise and or if there are cost overruns during construction, the project wants the ability to be able to get additional bonds before construction is completed, because that's when you need to use the bond cap. In the event things went up and we weren't positioned to do that, you know, the bond amount would remain static, cost would go up, and then there's a danger that you would no longer pass the 50% test and you get a reduction of your tax credits. So this is kind of, while the deal does pass the 50% test, this is sort of belt and suspenders planning to make sure that there is some ability to get additional cap and to make sure that they are safely above the 50% test.
Are there any other questions?
Yeah, that answered my question, because I was just wondering, because anytime you have a construction project, once you get into it, there's always additional costs that you didn't foresee that the contractor comes back to you with. And so that's what I'm just, that's why I was wondering, was there a set amount? Was it 7.5? What made sense? Because we really can't see into the future in terms of construction costs, inflation, interest rates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And did Bill adequately answer that question for you, Carl?
Yes. Chairman Carrington, I think Commissioner Duncan Hall made the motion, but it wasn't seconded.
Okay. Then we'll have discussion, because I have something on. Is there a second?
I second.
Thank you. Thank you, Mary. So, Bill, the additional, let's say the additional $5 million will be issued. So if that, if those proceeds are not utilized, then those bonds will just be redeemed. How will that work? What will be the process for that?
Well, that's correct. So this would just be the inducement, which would allow for an application for those bonds. And so it may be that that those funds aren't used. I'm sure the deal could use it now, and they're, you know, either through application in the lottery or the application of various carry forward funds. And an application of up to $5 million could be made. Now, I do think that the developer was working on getting some updated projections from the project accountants as well, just to make sure that based on more current numbers, you know, the 50% test is still good, but it's our understanding it still is, just with a narrower margin than when the transaction was initially penciled out.
Okay. So there's been a motion and a second. Any more discussion? Not all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Motion passed. Thank you.
I'm sure there's no need for an executive session, and I believe we can adjourn.
We will close Austin Affordable PFC at 2:19.
I do have a question that's somewhat related to it, but not to the financing, but it's to Sylvia. And that is, how is the relocation of the families going?
It's going very, very well. I think we are down to the last one or two families at the site. One. We're down to one family. So it has gone extremely well. You know, Ann's team with Tiffany Middleton and our relocation consultant, CBR Associates, have done a phenomenal job in getting everyone relocated. So, yeah, very, very, very well.
And so has construction started, or will it start soon?
We haven't closed yet. It'll close in October.
October 6th is, I think, the tentative closing date.
Demo will begin soon after.
The fast, yeah.
Okay.
Madam Chair, we need to go back and get, we adjourned at 2:19, but ask for who made that motion, and could someone make that motion?
I don't think we took a motion.
No, we did not.
We so moved.
Okay. Carl makes the motion. Tyra seconds. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
All right, I've got a question about Rosewood. When we get the people out, is there any worry about nobody's living there, living in the property, break-ins or theft, or do we, what is anything we do about that?
Yes, Commissioner. In fact, Ann has been working closely with the Carlton team to get fencing installed at the site. So it will be completely enclosed to ensure for that type of safety.
And we've had off-duty police out there, too, I think, because we did have a little bit of vandalism out there. And we it's just a
copper and...
It's more about just tagging the buildings and
smashing windows,
break-in.
But like to use empty buildings for privacy.
Yeah, that was my question.
I understand that, but I'm thinking folks who really want to make money, they're looking for copper.
Keep in mind, they were window units there, so there's not a whole lot.
Right.
People steal window units because copper... or inside those window air conditioning units.
We took those out, though.
We're taking those out and replacing them at Santa Rita and other.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Commissioners, it was just going to the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda. Chairman Carrington. Chairwoman Carrington.
Meeting has been called to order. Quorum has been established. Is there any public communication related to items from the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation?
No
public communication. Okay. The first item is the consent item to approve the minutes of the meeting held on August the 18th.
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The first action item is the presentation and discussion and possible action on Resolution 00094. The intent to issue bonds to finance a multifamily residential rental development for persons with low and moderate income, and this would be the pathways at Rosewood Courts, prescribing certain terms and conditions of the bonds, authorizing the filing of an application for private activity bonds to the Bond Review Board, and containing other provisions related to the project.
Suzanne, I do have a question I do have a question.
I was not prepared to do that one. On Rosewood?
No. The Oaks.
Oh, the Oaks. I'm sorry. You'll hear me today. Commissioners, staff, and guests, it's great to actually be back in front of you today instead of having Ron present everything. On the Oaks, you have seen this one before. You approved the construction loan back in March of 2019. I'm very excited to let you know this property has been constructed. We've gotten the COs issued, and we are 96% occupied. So now what we're asking you to do is approve the refinance of the construction loan so that we can get into a permanent loan. The construction loan was taken out with Broadway Bank, which is a local bank. And now we're going to refinance it into permanent financing with Bellwether, who is our really good partner lender. Just a little bit of background on the Oaks. This is the third phase, basically, of the Ben White complex, like I like to call it. The Villages of Ben White is the senior property. It's towards the back. Then the Point at Ben White is the family property. And then you have the Oaks, which is also kind of family singles. The senior property and the family property that were built in 2014 were built with tax credits. So they were affordable to people earning 60% AMI and below. And then the Oaks, we did a workforce housing, which is 50% of the units are affordable from 80% down to the 60, and then the other half is market rate, which we, self-impose a lower than market rate. This allows us, anybody that gets priced out, earns like a dollar over 60% AMI and cannot live in those other two, to be able to transfer over into the Oaks without, having to leave the whole community. This is a partnership with LDG. The Villages and the Point were the very first new construction properties we ever did. And LDG we've partnered on 11, I believe, more with them. And I think that's about, well, just a few of the terms. The loan amount is, we're doing the resolution to not to exceed $19 million, but I think it's going to be a little bit lower. We're looking at an interest rate estimated at 4.44%. And the appraisal came in at an estimated value of $42,900,000, which is like...
It's remarkable.
Really good.
So it's a fairly straightforward thing moving to our permanent financing. So we would ask for your approval of this resolution number...
200214, and I need to correct what I said on the other resolution. That was not correct. We are not issuing bonds.
That's what threw me off. Okay.
Back to a refinancing.
Thank you.
Basically. I'm sorry, Bill. A refinancing.
That's all right. I was just having a minor heart attack. That's
okay. No, I was like, don't want to cause that. So what we're doing, let me just correct the record, if I might. 00214. Okay. And it is to finance the refinancing of the Oaks at Ben White and take any other actions necessary to accomplish this refinancing. So that's what we're doing. Okay. So now I need a motion. Ira made the motion.
Second.
Mary seconds. Any more discussion?
Yeah, let's see about putting some bonds in there. See what Bill can do.
No.
I have a question. A shopping center.
Maybe we just need a new chair of Austin Affordable Housing Corporation.
Oh, yeah. Suzanne, so on this map, so can you just kind of show me again? So all three properties are contiguous, is that correct?
Can you zoom in? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're exact same. Yeah, if you can.
Because I'm looking at this map and they're all three dots on top of each other.
Every time I head to the airport, I look left.
Yes, you
look left when you head to the airport.
To the south.
Oh. Okay. So they're across the freeway from each other.
They're all on the same freeway. The back property is the Villages of Ben White.
Okay, I see.
And then the Point at Ben White is the family. That one has 184 units that are 183. The Point has 250. And then the Oaks, this one is showing that it's still under construction, but it is complete. And it's got 96 units.
Okay.
That's it. And they're all...
Mm-hmm. Right in front.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're all kind of set up separate, but we're able to pull staff from the properties where we need to. And, you know, if they want to use the amenities at each of the other properties, they're all welcome to because we're the same owners and management company.
One other question.
Questions?
Yes. One of the reasons is to allow other former residents at the other two properties to move if they have reached a certain income total.
Mm-hmm.
Has that happened yet? Is the main transition?
I don't think so since we leased up so fast.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, as we have vacancies, we are marketing to those properties as well. But I don't think we had any that were, you know, needed to transfer in there at this
point. But they would be notified if they were in that situation.
We market to both of those properties just to let them know, you know, if you're coming up that you need to move, you know, these are the vacancies we have.
Thank you.
Any more questions or comments about this? So this one is a 96-unit property, and maybe not to put you on the spot, but I bet you know this number. What is the total? What are the total number of units in this complex with these three properties?
183, 250, and 96. And
you were okay. Good enough. Okay, I'd have to take my shoe off. Total 400, around 400 units.
Yeah.
Like
that. 183 and 96 would be 279.
I got 346.
Oh, okay.
346.
Okay.
So when you head to the airport, folks, look left. Yeah, the oaks, it's just, they're right there beaming at you. It's really pretty. Yeah.
Keeping us moving, though, Chair, I'd like to.
Oh, can I just say,
go ahead.
I just want to thank the board. We wouldn't be where we're at without your support. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I will be bringing some more new construction that you haven't seen in November, so just care of.
Well, I remember Mr. Gerber. Sorry. When we approved this first development, as was mentioned, it was our first tax credit development. It was the first development with LDG. So it was the first on several fronts for us. And I think by all accounts, it's turned out very well.
Yeah. It's been great.
Yes.
Okay, Rutledge's chair, 20 minutes. So I want to keep going.
Okay, so.
No need for an executive session. No need for, I think that's all the items to come for. Also affordable. Would suggest a motion to adjourn.
So, motion to adjourn at 2:32.
So we need a motion.
Ira, Mary second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay. We are adjourned. So going back to the hot agenda, we're going to go up. We're going to start at number 4, presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding item 02763, authorizing the Housing Authority to take actions necessary for condemnation proceedings related to the development of Rosewood Courts. This is a weird situation. Andy, you want to quickly describe it?
I'll do my best to do as quickly as I can. Rosewood Courts is 80 years old. There's a culvert that runs under it that is Paquito Creek. Paquito Creek is daylighted on each side and runs under Rosewood. As part of that redevelopment, the city is making us completely redo the culvert. So a lot of the work that happens there happens where Paquito Creek starts to run under Chacon Street and run under Rosewood. Where it goes underground, that property is owned partly by Haka as part of our Selena Apartments that's just to the west of Chacon, and part of it is owned by a group made up of several family members. One of the owners is Doris Potts, and so we've come to call it the Potts parcel. So the Potts, Mrs. Potts and her family members own this property. We have been in contact with the family, and we are negotiating purchase of this very, very small 874 square foot parcel that is in the bottom of the creek in a floodplain covered by bushes. We feel that it is unusable to an individual owner, and we feel that we are close to reaching an agreement on a purchase price. In the event that that falls through and we are unable to finalize that transaction, what we need to be able to complete our work is 2 easements, a construction easement, just temporary during the period of construction, and a permanent access easement. The construction easement is for us and our construction team. The permanent access easement is for the City of Austin to be able to perform maintenance. In the event that we can't finalize the sale and we would have to exercise the Housing Authority's authority of eminent domain, we would not be using eminent domain to obtain purchase of the property, but to obtain the necessary easements for the property. And that's a process. I won't go into detail, but that's in a nutshell what we're looking for.
But the good news is yesterday, the Potts family came back to the Housing Authority and said, the lawyer for the Potts family came back and said, we've gotten all of our relatives together, and some people love it, some people don't, but we're all in agreement that we'll sell you the property for $28,500. Is that correct?
Yep.
So we would ask that this resolution be amended to authorize the staff to proceed with condemnation proceedings related to the development of pathways at Rosewood Courts, or to approve up to $28,500 through the transaction to purchase this property and to enable us to proceed with the redevelopment of Rosewood Courts. So it gives us both authorities. And that $28,500 be conditioned on closing of the deal within 30 days. So that's what we would ask for, that modified resolution of that.
So the chair looks to Commissioner Cureton to offer that amendment.
I second the amendment.
Second.
Oh, do I? No, you moved.
No, Commissioner Cureton offered the amendment. You just seconded it.
Okay, I just seconded it.
Is there any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. The motion has been amended. Now we're back to the main motion as amended.
I move approval of the motion to 02763.
As amended.
As amended. I second.
Seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. Any discussion?
I got one quick question.
And then I'll come after Chuck.
What did we offer? What did we offer for this?
We took the TCAD value, which was $6,700 for the property, $6,800. But our sense was we thought they would potentially come back asking for some outrageous amount. There's other landowners nearby. We need that land. You know, our sense is if we save on the legal fees and other things, this fits well within with what we kind of have budgeted to sort of, to deal with this matter.
Was the church, Rosewood Baptist Church, the day we wanted to negotiate with them on something and they wanted $30,000? Is that correct?
No, they wanted, the church was a moving target. And at the end of the day, I think that their excessive requests, we figured a different way to engineer it.
But what was the, because he's looking at 28.
It was like $600,000 for that land that they were looking at buying the whole parcel to the north. They've got a cobbling together of parcels, and frankly, it just kind of surprised us the way they were proceeding. And so it was cheaper to re-engineer it.
So Chuck, on one hand, the TCAT said it was $1,600. We were trying to deal with the church.
$6,900.
A church who wanted $600,000. And so we basically were able to possibly sell it for 28.
We thought it was a good deal. We went with this.
And we just came up.
It's the same piece of property we're talking about? $600,000?
No, we just adjusted. The engineers were able to adjust to the north, to the south. The where the bend in the drainage channel would be, and they worked with the city. On that.
Let Mike, I'm all right. Well, if the condemnation lawyers are okay with it, I'm okay with it.
We've been working with Bill's partner at Coach Rose, and they felt like this is I don't think we're going to get to the condemnation issue. I think we'll have a settlement on it. But this enables us to keep moving forward and have a little bit of a stick if we can't get them to the table.
Long story short, Chuck, is we're paying for something that the city didn't want to pay for.
I'm just thinking about those easements. Why would we be paying for their easement if we had to go that way?
It's our project. So to make you feel better about it, the city did approve since we've met in the last 2 months. They approved on the 9th.
On September 1st.
On September 1st. They approved $9.2 million for us for this project. So they've come in a big way, understanding the big some of the bigger issues that we have to deal with on this. So we're getting a good chunk from them. Yeah.
And we came up in our number. Number just based on one that we thought they would accept.
We asked them to make an offer. I think we offered them $20,000 this year. Yep.
Yeah, and there are more than a dozen family members involved in this.
I'm okay with this. We don't get the weeds on it.
I had a question about it.
How did we come up with our number? That's a tough answer. One that we thought that they would probably accept.
We thought it was fair.
Negotiating.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm like Chuck. I'm good.
We thought about the legal fees and stuff. I think we thought that was a reasonable position.
Time.
Right. So this has been approved. Did we vote?
We haven't voted.
We got a motion in the second, and we were doing discussion. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. And we should go to item number two.
Good luck.
Item number three.
Item number three.
We're going to just work our way up. Item number three is resolution number 2762, approval of revisions to the Family Self-Sufficiency Plan. And Becky Somerset's going to come forward and join us at the table and walk us through in 3 minutes or less something that you, that you don't hear that much
pressure
about.
Pressure.
Okay. Does everyone know Becky?
No.
Becky has been with our team for how many years? 13?
14.
14. And she does a wonderful job. She is the head of our family self-sufficiency program based in Lisa's shop, among a myriad of other things that she's doing to make how to work effectively and to engage our residents. So thanks for coming.
Having me.
Yes. So the purpose of this revision to the family self-sufficiency action plan is that HUD has mandated that all housing authorities, all PHAs, and any FSS program revise their FSS action plans in accordance with the new regulations. It's the long name of it, Streamlining and Implementation of Economic Growth and Regulatory Relief and Consumer Protection Act changes to the FSS program, but they refer to it as the FSS final rule because that is very unwieldy. And there's a lot of major changes going on with FSS that have come down from HUD. So that's why they're having all FSS programs revise their action plans in accordance with these new changes. And they also just want to make sure that all FSS programs are run appropriately. And they, and this is coming from HUD headquarters, so they're actually reviewing every single one of the 700 action plans around the country themselves. And I can go over some of the highlights. There's quite a few changes, but one of them is that now any adult family member can be designated as head of FSS family. It doesn't have to be the HOH through HCD. So that's a big boon. And let me preface this by saying all of these changes are really beneficial for the resident. So it's long anticipated and very welcome changes to the FSS program. Another change is that now everyone's contracts are going to automatically get longer. The FSS contract, as you might know, is normally 5 years long, but now it will be 5 years from the first recertification after they sign their contract. So that enables them to get potentially 5 full years of escrow instead of waiting for the first change. So that's really helpful for our participants and mandated by HUD. So these are all the mandated ones. A big one that you guys will probably be interested in is that forfeited escrow funds are now not turned back over to HAP, but they are now available for current FSS program participants used for supportive services. Also can be used for FSS coordinator training. So, of course, our priority is supporting our FSS members, and so that is how we first derive the funds in the action plan. And another big one, they all seem big, is that the escrow can now be actually dispersed when the contract's terminated in certain very specific instances, such as when the head of household, head of FSS family is permanently disabled, instead of having to try to finagle that contract to make sure that they can graduate now, they can graduate just because they fulfilled their goals before that point where they became disabled, which is a great advantage. Mm-hmm. And now also the contract extensions can also occur whenever there's a goal that they haven't completed that doesn't necessarily have to be only suitable employment. So now if they have a goal to complete their college degree, they can extend their contract for that purpose instead of only the suitable employment requirement, which is fantastic because many people do have to revise down their goal because they didn't quite complete that college degree, and now they can remain on the program while they finish that degree. And just one more quick one, the TANF requirement is now they just have to be TANF-free at the end of the contract instead of the 12 months, which has been a barrier occasionally. Most of our families don't have TANF, but it's another resident-centered benefit.
And, Becky, none of these are surprises, and most are incorporated to law, and so we're really required to adopt them if we want to continue to operate in a HUD-supported family self-sufficiency program.
I do have a question because I'm not familiar with the Texas bungalows. What's that?
I'm sorry?
Texas bungalows. I see where we're proposing to revise the name of Texas bungalows to the bungalows at Century Park. Is that part of our portfolio?
No, Texas bungalows is one of the properties that we're project-basing vouchers at for
the homeless.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the other ones below that are the same. We're adding the PV tenant selection criteria, balconies, terrace, the gardener, the Candlewood Suites.
I think you're looking at the next item we're going to go to. This will run item number three. I think you're at number two.
Item number three, right?
Item number three.
Three.
Mm-hmm. Three. Where are you?
With the family self-sufficiency action plan.
Yeah. It's right here. Revised names of the Texas bungalows and bungalows at Century Park, and then we're adding the PVs, PVD tenant selection criteria. So I think this is the.
Is that on four?
Yeah. This is the administrative plan. I'm sorry. It's actually that times two.
Well, this guy.
Okay, how many families do we have in our family self-sufficiency program?
Right now we have 268, just about.
I'm sorry, 268.
We have a range where we can serve up to 285 with our current staffing. But this big change to all the regulations has enforced the hold on enrollment until all action plans are approved by HUD. So the implementation deadline is November 14th, and we have to submit all of our revised action plans actually in the HUD headquarters by the end of September so that they can get them approved by the implementation deadline.
How long will it take them to? And their deadline is when?
November 14th, they've said that they plan to get them turned around within 45 days. So,
I have 700 of them, okay. read and approve, and maybe approve or not approve.
Right. So if there's revisions that they, it's a lot. If there are revisions that they see need to happen, then they will turn them back to the EFSOS program and the PHA or multifamily owner to request those revisions be made, and they'll give a new deadline for those revisions to be made to remain in compliance.
Want that job at HUD. Okay. No more questions.
I have a question.
Sure.
It's about the family demographics that's in your report on page 4.
Okay, so as we...
Yes, ma'am.
And five. Now, am I to understand that the income distribution that you show here for households, that this is for any, the average income for the housing choice voucher family and not for the low income families?
That's right.
I'm looking at the numbers here and trying to figure out how many of our voucher families with this type of income, 85% are below 30,000. So there's not very many who are going to be eligible to get into some of our properties, our newest properties where it's 80% below medium income. And I was a little bit concerned about seeing that number. I thought that this would be more applicable to the low-income residents.
They can get in because if they have a voucher, exactly. They're able to have access to any of the properties.
So this is not including their voucher. It doesn't include their voucher, right?
They're not restricted by, so if they have a voucher, they're able to get into the property.
Okay, see, so even if they're among this low income,
yes.
That's up to $30,000.
Yes, correct.
Uh-huh. That's pretty revealing, though. So 85% at $30,000. Do we know what the average is for our low income families? And
it's probably about 13,000.
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
About 13,000.
13,000 annual.
Well, that was an eye-opener for me. Okay, so, but with the voucher, they can really be eligible to apply. That's for a lot of these properties. There was another, maybe it was in the report, but there's several properties in at what I remember looking at. The pattern was that the older properties that we have, like Sweetwater and some of those others, have very few people in those properties who have vouchers. And some of the newer ones that we've approved recently have up to maybe 30 or 40 people holding vouchers in those properties. So I'm saying, what's happening? Are we not marketing to the older properties, or what's going on that they don't have any, or maybe one or two?
No, I'm not sure. I'd have to look at it, but people also get a choice, so they're probably, in some ways, I'm just, they might choose something
they're not going to
a little new and more modern. And
yeah, the more modern.
More amenities, perhaps, more energy efficient.
Well, I was just curious because given the fact that the newer ones we're trying to get into are the high opportunity areas, and we have seen some movement there with people with vouchers going in, but then some of the older properties I don't see from the data that's in this report at the end that there are that many. And I'm just wondering, is the issue of marketing, misunderstandings,
We let them know about all the opportunities. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, all of the opportunities that are available, they're made aware of.
Mm-hmm.
So any ones that we have that are a part of the Austin Affordable Housing portfolio are provided to anybody who's searching.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's up to them to sort of select where they would like to live.
Okay. Well, I just want to make sure that you're getting our fair share of vouchers into all these properties for their opportunities, because we know that there has been the agreement from all of the developers to include voucher holders, and so they don't have to go through that ring.
Right.
But the other ones that were sort of low in, I would just like to see perhaps more numbers there, a reason for why there aren't.
Well, that's kind of the irony of the whole thing, is that if you look at the new construction projects, those are the ones that we really have developer partners.
Yeah.
And they have a healthy number of voucher holders.
Exactly.
But on the ones that we actually acquired, these are ones where we have a lot of control.
Uh-huh.
That are administered by our partners at AMP. And there's not as many voucher holders there.
That's so what we're trying to get to.
We need to work up those numbers as well. I share your concern about so many. Yeah.
I'll get with Nancy and have her coordinate with Suzanne to see.
It's a trick because people do have choice. But
it could also be because these were acquisitions; they were already occupied, so the turnover isn't quite as
high.
Great, as high. Mm-hmm. Whereas these are, being built from scratch and they're all vacant.
And five of them was zeros of ours we acquired in 2022.
This year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this take a little time.
July, June.
Right.
But on the family self-sufficiency plan, we do think that these are appropriate changes that need to be made for us to continue to engage that program at the federal level and to support these 280-plus residents who participate in it, and Becky and her team do a wonderful job.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, we would ask for a motion to approve Resolution 2782.
It's a long
one. Yes, he is. He's doing a pretty good job, too.
Harrington motions in support, and Apostolo seconds.
All in favor? Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. And then we go to the last item, with item number two. Ms. Garcia, to tell us about the proposed changes to the Housing Choice Voucher plan, administrative plan. We'll go out for public comment and then come back for approval in 60 days.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, so this item is not an action item. This is where we bring it to you, sort of let you know the summary of the things that we're going to put out for public comment. go through them briefly. You have the summary there, but I'll just cover the highlights. So one of the things that we're proposing is an alternative criminal background criteria for households experiencing homelessness that are referred through coordinated entry for the mainstream program, for the foster youth to independent program. The current criminal screening criteria that was adopted last year would still be in place for all others that are being referred through the wait list for the voucher program. What this means, it would be just the mandatory screening requirements, which is currently the case. It was the case for the mainstream program, but HUD, that waiver has been taken away, so we no longer can have that in place. And these are for the mainstream program is one that we have about 438 vouchers right now, and it's for chronically homeless, and sometimes they have barriers to getting housing because of their criminal histories and so forth. So this and all of the folks that are going to get referred through coordinated entry have case managers that are working with them, and the intention is to get them off the streets into housing and to be able to have the support services they need to be able to be successful. I feel this also, the reason for this change is we are project-basing more and more vouchers, mm-hmm. and those that we project-base are, again, referred through coordinated entry. And when we put out the project-based voucher request for proposal, mm-hmm. we require them to have what's called like a housing first screen criteria, which is low barrier housing, but yet our current policy we have in place mm-hmm. is more restrictive mm-hmm. than what we're requiring through that RFP. So I think it's really necessary to help people to really get into housing that are homeless and have that support services combined so that they can be successful. So that's what that changes here. That's one of the major changes. We did have to ask HUD for this because it's a different, you know, applying a different criteria compared to, as I had already mentioned, those that are coming off the wait list. So we are waiting for the approval from HUD to do this, which would require a waiver. So we are waiting for that still.
That's important to note. HUD has not approved this yet, and we still mm-hmm. need to get that approval. But we hopefully have it by now. We've been pressing them like crazy. But, you know, my guess is it's probably these waivers aren't easy to get, and it takes a little time. But I think we will get it. But I think it's and I think it's the right bifurcation of criteria, given what the board has expressed in the past about having strong tenant selection criteria. But we do have we have to be realistic about having a group of very capable, supportive housing providers who really want to serve the homeless and are happy and are willing to accept a dramatically reduced screening criteria to be able to use the operating subsidy afforded by the voucher. And so for those folks who will get casework and will get other supports and who are coming through the homeless management information system and are known to us, we think that this respects the board's intent, expressed in numerous ways, but then also respects, I think, what the community, what several folks in the community are also saying about their need to serve the homeless and why this tool is so critical.
Explain the coordinated entry process.
So that's the
who all it involves.
So it involves a number of partners that work to serve the homeless in Austin, and it echoes, you know, the primary hub, you know, where that comes through.
Mm-hmm.
And so they take in, so they would, it's a lot of different folks. They do street outreach to find the homeless.
But Echo, it funnels up through Echo.
Mm-hmm.
Echo's kind of the ones who say you're in coordinate assessment, but you have, you know, Caritas and Salvation Army and, you know, Front Steps and Trinity Center and the Arch and LifeWorks and a variety of other players who are working with folks.
Do they like sort of do a triage function, Echo?
I'm not sure if they do a triage function or they each sort of play different roles. They certainly
but
do.
But they're like the first stop, right?
No, they're kind of like the key data.
Oh.
They hold the data and they're kind of like, they play a connector role of connecting folks with deeper services
right.
and the housing that they
okay.
that they need. And, you know, and it's a system that's in need of some pretty significant improvement, to say the least.
Does Echo have the thumbs up or thumbs down as to whether a potential resident or a homeless person would be eligible? I mean, are they the final arbitrator or?
Well, I think they work with a provider, and together they determine if that person's in coordinated assessment, don't they?
Right. And then they have a vulnerability scale, like who's going to get housed first. So they look at all the resources that are available in Austin to serve the homeless and what's the best fit for them depending on their circumstances as it comes through coordinated entry. So if someone might be a homeless veteran that's going to get case managed by the VA, they have to go through coordinated entry too. But then they're going to look at who's at the most need. And then they also have the ECHO Leadership Council, is various members of the community that are a part of it. You know, each year they're going to look at what's the criteria in terms of who's going to be eligible, you know, over others. And then there's scores, you know, they get point, and then similar, you know, then they get referred in that manner. So we get all the referrals through one spot, but it comes from multiple agencies. But ECHO is the primary one it comes through.
Okay. And they're really the lead also in trying to bolster the casework efforts in the city as well. And that's where we've really struggled. I mean, there's not enough casework long-term to support all the folks coming through coordinated assessment, which has made project basing of vouchers and other resources, so challenging. But I think that there's been a lot of effort made in that regard. And I think, again, there's a whole lot about the system that's not ideal. But for us to create a barrier that the rest of the city says is impeding people to get housing, I think is in a spot where we want to be. And so, we've got another kind of quasi-governmental entity in ECHO and in this collection of support of agencies that are saying that they needed to conduct their business. And I don't think we want to stand in their way.
So there's a process, Lisa, and that they all go through as far as the criminal background check or drug abuse or things like that before they get into housing.
Right. So, yeah. So the criteria that we put forth will be the mandatory screening criteria. So they're still going to go – they'll get referred to us, mm-hmm. but they're still going to go through our admissions department. And they still have to go through our eligibility criteria to get into housing.
But even before that, with other resources, like you mentioned caseworkers, so they will identify the ones that are problems or maybe not shouldn't be in housing yet?
They would pre-screen them based on our criteria that we have in place for the referral. And that criteria that is on page 78 of the plan. So that is what we would be screening for based on criminal criteria, and it's the mandatory requirements. That's on 78 of the plan. I don't know what page is on your book, but the act plan.
Just go a little past. It's a little bit back, and you'll see it in pink.
And it spells it out right there, 1 through 5. So any member of the household that has been evicted from federally assisted housing in the last 3 years for drug-related criminal activity is one. Here, I can show you. This way.
There's many, many changes to this plan. But,
Here.
I was looking at the wrong page.
So that would be the first one. The other one is HACCA determines that the household member is currently engaged in illegal use of a drug. Mm-hmm. Number three, HACCA determines that it's reasonable cause to believe the household member's illegal drug use or pattern of illegal drug use may threaten the health, safety, or right to peaceful enjoyment of the premises of other residents. And four, any household member has ever been convicted of drug-related criminal activity for manufacture or production of methamphetamine on premises of federally assisted housing or any location. And then the fifth one is if any member of the household is subject to lifetime sex registration requirements. So those are what they'd be screened for.
Okay.
For those that are being referred to a coordinated entry.
Can I ask a sort of unrelated question, but this for this whole thing. For many years, there seemed to be competition among various agencies who are seeking funding, grant funding, and that type of thing. Has that pretty much stopped where people are now sort of working in a more coordinated fashion and playing nice with each other rather than the kind of really competition is the only word I could think of.
Are you referring to?
I'm talking about various agencies. You know, you got Caritas, you got Foundation Communities, you got this group, you got that group.
If it's related to housing vouchers specifically, we work collaboratively with all the organizations.
Does it in terms of the homeless?
Yeah, I believe that we do. Yeah, we look at, like, if there's an opportunity that comes available, we definitely look at that opportunity and make sure those that are would be able to. It just depends what kind of voucher assistance comes available. So if it's, for instance, Foster Youth to Independence, of course, mm-hmm. we're going to look to LifeWorks because that's mm-hmm. the population that they yeah. work with.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing right. that I'm hoping is happening yeah. much more than it used to.
Yeah, I feel that it really is. I feel okay. the community's coming together like,
okay.
like that. Definitely.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
You know, it's one of my favorite topics.
I know it is.
But, Mike, are we going to bring this up again before we finally pass it?
Yeah.
We will, but our assumption is that it goes, if it's in this discussion today, our assumption is that when we bring it back in 2 months without any substantial changes, that, you know, that the community will then have a chance to look at it. And we can't change it again on the community. So we've got to. So what we're in effect saying to the homeless serving community is, we hear you, we've adapted to you and what you've asked for, but we're also going to stand by the things that we as a board also value as we work with other housing providers in the community where casework's not offered and where these aren't our brothers and sisters who are homeless coming through coordinated entry. So we stand by our principles of supporting the homeless and the agencies that are doing that important work. And we stand by our principles of ensuring that folks who have track records that are less than desirable don't get to participate in our program and are screened out, provided that they're not homeless coming through coordinated entry. So we try to, it's an uneasy tension. We're not sure that HUD's going to let us do it. We hope that they will, but if the board's not on board with that tension in this plan, but my hope is that this is the last time we're bringing the plan forward for a number of years. So this is it for quite some time. So, because it's just a picking and a scab every year with the homeless folks. And I just assume, frankly, not see it again. So,
All right. Well, I was gonna just wait, but commissioners, I'm gonna let both barrels go here. This is not a good idea. We reduced the intensity and the completeness of background checks for Section 8 applicants a month or two ago, and Lisa and I worked out some language. I still had some problems, but we worked out a compromise. Now we're taking another step, and we're taking another group of people, the homeless people, who are more likely to have criminal law, criminal problems and criminal histories and crimes in their background, and giving them an easier review. Now, there's something that's just fundamentally wrong with that, and we are letting – so what we're saying is that, well, we know that you may be more likely to have a criminal background, but because you're homeless, we're not going to take that hard look at you, because the homelessness is more important to solve. That problem is more important to solve than the safety of the people that we're going to be putting you next to. And that's just not right. And I know the homeless, they've got their own agendas. Oh, I thought that's where Tyra was going. they, you know, there's all kinds of social groups out there that want to be successful in their program or their progress. We have got a fiduciary duty to the people that that live in the properties that we manage in the Section 8. And it's just going to take one of these. And they talk about, well, we're going to have these social workers that are going to be monitoring them. A lot of them have parole officers that can't control them or probation officers. I think this is just a bad, bad mood. I don't see any compromise. I don't have at least I don't have your report here to see what all you're making it easier to do, but this isn't a good idea. And and Mike and I talked about it, and I told Mike I would listen. And the more I listened, I thought, this is a really good argument for the homeless folks. This is not a good argument for the housing authority. In my opinion, there's just some fundamental differences. And again, what you're doing is we're making it easier by not looking at criminal backgrounds of a group of people who are more likely to have those criminal backgrounds. And in doing so, they'll have a much better likelihood to get their vouchers and move into places with children and elderly, and it's just not a good idea.
So Commissioner Bailey, just to clarify, I think that I think it's hard to say that our homeless neighbors have disproportionately more criminal screening issues, that they've got a deeper criminal set of criminal background, arrests or history, criminal history. We don't know. What we do know is that they do have a more profound, struggles with mental illness and are really desperate for the casework piece. And the piece of this that is, so the worst screening criteria, the things dealing with, dealing with, the household member currently using drugs, what are the three big screening criteria?
Sex offenders, currently using drugs,
methamphetamine,
property, and then if they've been evicted from federal housing in the last 3 years.
So those
criminal activity.
So those stay intact. Those absolutely stay intact.
I understand, and those are federal requirements.
Those are federal requirements, but HUD has told us that they would like to see all of us reduce our criteria to just these. So to some extent, in a way, we're almost, we've been a little bit more of an outlier by keeping a more rigorous set. And frankly, I think we would have been hammered had this board not gone and did what it did last year, at Lisa's, with Lisa's leadership, which I'm grateful for, although we struggled going through it, to take out patterns, to take out, to change look back periods. HUD is consistently, under Republicans and Democrats, said we need to reduce the criteria because we're trying to meet other social goals. The thing about this is that with this reduced screening criteria, we're enabling those who are providing housing. So these are folks like Caritas that are building housing,
mm-hmm.
Like Foundation Communities, like SAFE, like LifeWorks, like what?
Katie Lofts.
Like Katie Lofts. We're involving Katie Lofts, where we're doing it with New Hope Housing. It enables us to all have a reduced set of criteria and really meet those needs in housing that's intentionally set up for those folks. So we're not putting homeless folks into an environment where they weren't intended to go. We're not forcing them, into an environment where, they weren't welcome. We're just enabling them to participate in a program that was really where housing's really being developed for them, yet they're being excluded again. And I think that's the hardest part of this. So all the
well Mike, there's a reason they're being excluded again, and I know that the mayor has got a big hard on for getting this done for the homeless people. And I agree, that's an issue. It's a bad issue. But not when we make it easier for our regular folks to be put in danger. And for that matter, the mental illness, we're not a mental hospital. It's like putting them in the jails. The jails can't deal with them. Now they'll have social workers, but, and I understand that, but I tell you what, if what we did was say we're going to reduce the criminal background check for homeless people who can go to these type of places and not any Section 8 deal, then I'd probably come along with that. But if we're putting them out in the general public, I'm not there.
But isn't that what we're doing? There are limits. So, Kasich, I think you and I are on the same page in terms of there are a limited number of places that are being built and offered for them.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that.
And so what we're doing is providing them the voucher, which basically is providing the finance for them to get into there.
We're paying the rent for them for that place.
But it's not that. But we also have a mainstream program that we have 438 that are tenant-based vouchers, that those are tenant-based. And right now we've had that in place for over a couple years. We were allowed to have a waiver for people that are the mainstream program specifically for non-elderly disabled homeless. So we have had that in place, and for 438 vouchers. We've had it in place for the VASH program. We have up to 781 VASH vouchers. So there's a number that we've already had this in place for. We've had the Shelter Plus Care. It used to be Shelter Plus Care program. It's a continuum of care program. We've had that in operation since 1994.
All right, well, let me ask
you. Very little screen criteria. And we've been successful because we've had case management services married with it. Otherwise, how are they going to get into housing?
It only takes one. It only takes one time for something bad like I'm talking about to happen. If you can tell me that this new program that does less criminal background for, in my opinion, based on my experience, a group of people that are more likely to have had some type of criminal activity in their past, and as well as the mental issues, if you can tell me that these vouchers are going to only be used in facilities where they can receive help and with their social workers and that those folks want these type of tenants, then I'll probably go along with you. But if you can't, but if you can say, yeah, but we'll have others like we have in this mainstream program. I don't like the mainstream program. I don't know that I voted for it or not. I probably didn't.
Well, it was an award that we received from HUD to have vouchers to help the homeless. So it was something
you talked me into a compromise last time, and I'm worried about that since then. I'm telling you, this is not a good idea as it has been explained. If there's a way that we can limit it to homeless are not any more important than the people we put in there that are not homeless. And if there's no mixing of them, okay. But if there's going to be a mixing of them, no.
So, Lisa, based on what you said, so we already have this mainstream program that's been ongoing.
Right.
What we're doing here, though, is we're basically continuing with that, but you've identified some others in here that we're going to add to that. Is that correct?
Right. So the others.
So what we're doing is expanding what we've already agreed to, but these other ones are facilities that somebody else has built and run. We're just simply paying the rent.
In general, yes.
In general.
Not exclusively, but in general, yes.
Yeah.
And where there are supportive services available.
Yes. In every case, including mainstream, supportive services are available. So there
is. You need to remember one more thing. And I'll go back to our fiduciary duty. We're a housing authority. Our job is to provide housing and the various different ways that we provide it to people who are least in our community. They're the people that need our help for housing. It's our responsibility doesn't extend to homeless people. It, from a legal standpoint, it does not. Now, as and we can bend it and make it work so that we can be helpful and but not to the point that we're not use our fiduciary duty is I'm not going to bend on mine. And there's other people that we have to be concerned about besides the homeless people. And I'm not saying don't do this. I'm just saying don't reduce the criminal background check.
So I think two quick things that I think we ought to adjourn to. Yeah, look at that.
I got to go.
Go ahead. Thanks. You've been, Madam
Mr. Chair. Well, Chuck is the chair now.
He has to physically be present to be the chair. So.
Be present.
Sorry, Chuck. You understand you can't be the chair since you're not.
Well, I've already told him that I think he's correct in my legal opinion, so I can't go the other way.
Thank you. I just think that I think there's a couple of things to keep in mind. One is that obviously this is a draft that's you know not going to make. I mean, some people will be happy, some people won't be happy. It reflects a compromise. I'd say as the CEO here, you know, I feel very strongly that if someone doesn't have housing, that's the person that we at our core should be trying to help. I agree that they come to us from different places. Some of them come to us, you know, living in cars out in our parking lot. Some of them come to us, you know, couch surfing with families. Some of them come to us from violence against women or, you know, people who are aging in place and can't live with their families anymore. Or, you know, they come from a variety of different places, but the person under the bridge and the person who's, whoever doesn't have housing, I think they're our client too. So I just say that. We've adopted that. We've incorporated that into our work as we work through how we've made people eligible. We've given priority to different groups of folks, including the homeless, because they matter too. You're exactly right, Chuck, also in the fact that the way we do services for the homeless in this city is screwed up. There's a variety of things that don't work well. There's been all sorts of problems, a variety of policy approaches, some of which have, you know, helped a little bit and some of which have hurt a lot and others which have helped more. And anyway, but I do think that we would be doing a disservice to folks if we didn't allot some of our resources, especially where casework is already being provided. It's interesting that the instances where we see violence within our program is actually not among the homeless that are at our properties, but really among folks who are living in isolation. They get the rent paid, but then they're living in isolation somewhere. They don't have a caseworker going to visit them, and then they go on a tear and they shoot up something, or they go and they get into a fight, or they beat up their a loved one or else. And so we've seen, some of those acts of violence because people have lived in this isolation because no one bothered to come by for the whole pandemic to see how they were doing. Mm-hmm. So, I think it's a very complex picture and I'm not an expert on homelessness and Lisa's not either. And Dylan's on as well. All we know is just a little bit of the homeless side. And there's a bunch of people like 10 agencies who are saying, we're going to revamp our model to go and provide, you know, casework and help to these folks, you know, as best we can. Even though the whole system's screwed up, we're going to do our best to try to help. And they'll live with us most of the time, and we're going to see how many people we can get through. And it's not ideal, but it's also about, you know, this much of our, you know, of our 6,000 vouchers that we're dealing with. What percentage are we serving the homeless with? Maybe it's... Oh, sure. What percentage?
Including the BASH program.
Yeah, I mean, we got
all that. We have about 2,000.
About 2,000. But BASH and Mainstream are exclusively geared, and that's like 400 and something vouchers.
438 plus 761.
761 for Mainstream. So I mean, it's a lot. So that's a lot of. That, so 1,100 is just programs that you can only use for the homeless. But in our main program of 5,200 vouchers, it's about 1,000, isn't it? Less than that. So it's...
Yeah, and most of those are, we're project-basing them.
And we're project-basing. Yes. And so... So it's a, I mean, it's a sticky thing, and I, but I don't think this board, and I don't, and I'm sure not going to, we're not going to break faith with the homeless advocates. That's part of the housing ecosystem. I've told them directly to their face. I think parts of it are crazy and don't work well, but it's still part of people in our neighborhood, and we have to work with them effectively, and we have something that everybody needs. And we're the custodian of it, and we don't want to, it's tough. And I think you're answering the right questions, Chuck, about, you know, our fiduciary responsibility. We want to make sure people are safe. And we will go back and we'll work with them on the safety piece, on the casework piece, on the assurances that, you know, that folks are being included in community, and to try to build something that, you know, to build out a system. That's why I think the project basing is something that you guys should be so proud of. I mean, what we're doing in integral care, you know, at the terraces at Oak Springs, right there off of Oak Springs Boulevard near airport. You know, we've got 50 units. We're having 50 people who get health care and services. All that's every one of these project-based allotments that you all approve is a similar kind of deal. I mean, yes, they're converting a hotel. They didn't build something new, but there's services that are there. Family elder care is providing them at one. Integral care is providing them at another. There's, you know, Caritas is providing them at a third. I mean, it's not ideal the way it's done, but until we figure something better out.
I just have one last thing to speak about. Yeah. If we're going to do that, then I would like to have patrol on our properties, because we have homeless at the meth clinic. I mean, yeah, across the street, and they come in and buy drugs, sell drugs. I mean, I've had to stop so they can do their transactions. That's how obvious they are. So I've dealt with homeless. I've dealt with mental. We have one there at the apartment that came up to my daughter because we were coming down the stairs, and my daughter stayed upstairs, and she saw that this woman was coming. I don't know who she is. She went straight to my door and stood there when she saw me come out and my daughter. Why did she go? And she's having mental issues. So my daughter stood there and looked at her. When that woman saw my daughter was looking at her, she came over to her. And I thought, what is she going to do? I don't trust people that have mental issues. I have seen stuff. That scares me more than somebody toting a gun.
But would you rather have casework, or would you rather have nothing and be on the street?
What? Nothing to be in the street. No, if we're going to have people with mental issues, We need a patrolman on there. We need a security guard every day, all day long.
Mike, let me kind of close with this. As usual, you've done a really good job explaining all the good things we do and why we're doing what we're trying to do. And nobody could disagree with your rationale on any of that. See what y'all can come up with. And, you know, maybe have an ombudsman that does nothing but work on these kind of cases. Give it a 6-month trial and see if we're having problems, if we're not having problems. But, and I'm still not sure I'm a vote for it. But maybe like Mary said, maybe we need to have, I don't know. Y'all see what you can come up with, and then I'll look at it again.
Let's keep working on it and see what we do.
We have to see what we're waiting to hear what HUD says too. We have to see what the waiver is.
And that's the reason I wasn't going to say anything this time until next time. But y'all said I had to do it, so doesn't mean I won't do it again next time too. But I just to take a different test and apply it to it for the same emolument for a group of people that should be, in my opinion, tested not only for criminal history background, like Mary said, but we got, as we all know, there's a lot of mental issue folks out in the homeless folks. And Mike says, well, we're going to have somebody working with them, social workers. And that's fine. That's good. I'm still not sure we ought to be making it easier to get into our Section 8 places. But at any rate, you know, as usual, I will look and see what you can come up with. And Mike, I appreciate your
co-founder. Well, I appreciate you as well, Commissioner.
Do we have a deadline for understanding that we have not heard back from HUD? Do we have any kind of deadline then that we're looking at that's looming to make any changes?
We're okay right now because it's September. So I think in October, Kelly's going to be bringing the
annual
plan. So we'll have to have it put out for public comment at the time that does. So we have a little bit of, you know, we have a couple weeks probably.
Take a little bit of time.
Yeah.
So we'll keep working and we'll take
it. In other words, we do not have to make a decision or a recommendation today. Is that correct?
Well, but it will go out for public comment. Right. That's the thing. So we'll start asking them. So it leaves the safe space of, you know, this group and goes out for comment. And then if we start making changes, more changes, I think we'll get some good comments, but we'll see what folks say. And HUD, of course, could bring the whole shift down if they say no.
So we would put this out for public comment and yet not having heard back from HUD.
So we're not going to put it out for public comment until we hear back from HUD, my recommendation. So we're going to wait to hear from HUD before we put it out for public comment. And
HUD may shut down the discussion.
Yeah, so when we hear from HUD, we'll regroup, with right now Mike and Sylvia, and then decide, you know, what we're going to do for the put out for public comment.
Lisa, have you got stakeholders that you deal with?
Oh, yeah.
Not the kazoo.
Yeah.
I think there must be
I mean, it looks like you could kind of unofficially just bring some of the stakeholders in and explain what our issues are, see if they got any ideas.
You were at the board meeting when they, there were 25 of them that came.
No, I had already made my, well, I think Lisa and I had already worked out a deal.
We'll keep working through it. But I will say that I think the next several months are going to be challenging, and the board meeting will be set for the third Thursday of the month. So it'd be great to get everybody here for the board meeting, because there's issues with Southwest Housing and other issues. We'll take this information under advisement and wait for the board to and we'll update you individually once we get information from HUD on how they're wishing to proceed, and based on other guidance we've received from y'all today. But I appreciate the discussion and the candor of the candidness of the discussion. If I could turn quickly to the president's report, one thing I'd like to highlight: we issued our annual report, which is out, looks great. It's the final work product of Ken Bodden, who has gone to LifeWorks, and we miss him very much, and we wish him well. He did a lovely job, and I think you all will enjoy it. If you like extra copies, glad to provide you with them.
Mike, I got one quick question on that, and I almost feel like using both barrels. My picture looks like a corpse.
I've already asked for new pictures, Chuck.
Okay, I did. Well, I should have.
Based on your picture.
Yeah, that's right.
Not really. Based on mine. It's like mine is old. It's time to redo it.
Well, wait, you got great hair, too.
That's the stupid thing.
I like my picture. I'm thinner and
you don't have more hair, do you?
Hair now.
I didn't think so.
Why don't we look at between now and we'll look to doing both new pictures for commissioners as well as a class picture as well of the commissioners. So we'll look to do that.
With plenty of notice, right?
Plenty of notice, yes. All right. And then I think I've shared with most of you, but I think, Andrew, are you on?
I'm here.
I thought you were. So I know I've shared with all of you about the last bit of news, which is sad news, but Andrea Galloway is departing us next Friday. She's off to green pastures at Visa, which is not everywhere that I want her to be. unfortunately, it's the right move for her, and it was not a surprise. And just as Polaris wasn't a surprise, we have really gifted people who want to do other things, and it's very natural, you know, when they've got many years left in their career to want more progressive responsibility, and you know, people leave, and sometimes they come back, and sometimes they don't, and it's okay. And we're really excited for Andrea. We're going to celebrate her as soon as this is over over at Eastside Tavern, so I hope folks will join us over there. But I just want to say publicly how much I've enjoyed working with Andrea. You know, you all see her as the person who kind of fixes that makes the computers work and that stuff. You know, to talk about the enterprise change that she's made, you know, within our agency, the transitions to, as we've transitioned to different, different platforms, most recently Yardi, as we've moved to, you know, everything from HR systems to the work that Lisa does in her area to the, you know, to the reports. I mean, that our IT backbone is one of the strongest among housing authorities in the country. And Andrea's been a recognized leader. She's been active at the CLAFA, Large Public Housing Authorities, CIO group for many years. Has been a respected colleague of other PHA IT professionals around the country, you know, for many years. And it's remarkable that, the things we have done because of her leadership and skill. And beyond that, she's also brought just incredible management depth, someone who really enjoys, you know, helping people to bring out the best in people and to help them to realize their professional development goals. And, you know, the real blessing of that is that she has nurtured her folks in a way that we can easily step in with Keith Swenson taking over. It's going to be different, but he's ready for that challenge on an interim basis, and we'll go out with a recruitment. You know, we're posting, but she's built a team that's ready to handle it. And in Keith and in Michelle and in, others on her team, Andrea's, just really done a yeoman's job to get them, ready for any challenge, but now this one as well. And we're just really grateful to her service. And as a friend, I'm gonna miss her a lot. She's a fun person to hang out with and spend some time with. And, so I hope you get to do some of that this evening as well.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Mike. My time at HACA has really enriched my life personally and professionally. And HACA has been with me through so many life events, my husband being in Iraq, having both of my babies, the death of my father, you know, buying two different houses. They've just been my family, and they've been there for me. And, I am grateful for everything from HACA.
Good luck.
Well,
yes, we will miss you.
We certainly will.
And if you need help transferring over to American Express, I'm glad to help you.
Well, I have a Visa card.
but thank you, Andrea. Thanks a ton. And we'll see everybody over in just a few minutes. But I'm sure I think that's it. We're adjourned unless anyone has anything else. Sylvia, anything you want to say?
Well, we are adjourned at 3:39. And don't we need to take a boat to adjourn?
Yeah.
Okay, so before we are adjourned at 3:39, do I hear a motion?
Mary? I second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All righty. So now it's 3:40, Nydia.